Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
To the old me, scared and unseen, you're the reason I built this dream. Now I speak so others thrive, turn my scars into sound. I come alive from the ashes of the breakdown. I don't run, I rise, won't back down. This is the voice I found. For those who lost their voice, I sing it loud.
I keep it real, keep it purpose bound. Every word a step, every truth profound. We don't heal in silence, we fight with grace, softness and defiance, lighting up this place. It's a call to every soul who wants to be free. A song for
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Eden Cher.
And I'm Brock Charlelli.
We played best friends on The Middle.
And became best friends in real life.
We're here to rewatch The Middle with all of you.
Each week, we'll recap an episode with behind-the-scenes stories, guest interviews, and what we think now, many years later.
There's a lot to dive into, so let's get to middling.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Edna White, your host of Keeping It Real on Purpose. And we're so glad you're here with us today. Today, my esteemed guest is Benjamin Kintish. And I welcome him today talking on the subject of job loss, coping with job loss. So I'm so excited you're here today. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. I'm so glad to be here.
Great. So tell us, the audience and me, a little bit about you and your little background real quick, like, so we can get into this subject.
I'll just say I grew up like so many proud American Jews from the New York City area. Okay. My parents are New York City people from Far Rockaway. That's cool. Okay. The beach towns. My brother and I were born in Manhattan, but raised in the suburbs, a little town called Nyack, New York, which is in the Hudson River Valley.
I went to school there.
No kidding. Nyack High School?
College.
All right.
Yes.
Right on. So shout out to all the Nyack schools, I guess. That's a cool thing.
Exactly, right?
I went to middle school at the campus adjacent to where you went to college, right?
Okay, yes.
So there you have it. That's our connection.
Awesome.
We both enjoyed that beautiful view of the Hudson River. Gorgeous. Yeah. Every season. I grew up in Nyack, New York, and it bears saying that for my job path, as a child, I was a bright kid and I had a lot of things that I liked to do.
Right.
I think my guidance counselor in high school made some comment like, Ben, you can't pick jobs like you're crossing out from a big list process of elimination because you'll run out of time. And at the time I was like, what do you even mean? But now I see that was smart advice. Wow. But because he heard me as like a 16, 17 year old saying, I want to do music, but I also want to be a lawyer and I also want to be a teacher and I also want to be, and then, you know, six other things.
Right.
And he saw like, you're bright and talented, but you also need to kind of find a way to focus. It ended up in high school where I really shined more than anything was music. I was a really good vocalist, conservatory bound.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
Conservatory, like a music school.
Okay.
For instance, Juilliard is the most famous name brand conservatory in the United States, but there are a lot of really great ones at big state schools. So University of Illinois, University of Miami, they have great conservatories, meaning colleges where you get a Bachelor of Music, you spend 4 years essentially getting ready to be a performer or maybe a music teacher. Okay. But it's music, as opposed to a Bachelor of Art at a, quote, regular college where you do a certain amount of music, but also an assortment of other, right? Mm-hmm. So I started at a conservatory program as a freshman at Northwestern, which statistically might have been the most competitive place I got into because they had like 10 slots and several hundred applicants, right? That's crazy. But I was one of the handful of young men that they let in and they gave me a merit scholarship. And I was like, let's go. It felt like my big break. It turned out it wasn't the right path for me because conservatory is super, super focused. And I discovered, I don't think I want to be an opera singer. I think I want to explore more things and not pursue that particular goal.
Right.
So I kind of put that talent, that drive that I had in high school kind of up on a shelf. And then I transferred to Brown University. I got a, quote, regular college degree. It was a Bachelor of Arts in Judaic Studies. I played rugby, you know, I did activism, sort of the antithesis of what I imagined conservatory style focus might be, just a, quote, well-rounded college life. And it ended up that music remained a love, even though I wasn't pursuing the opera path or classical music path. My very first job out of school, you see the guitar over that shoulder, shoulder, that one, right? So that's not just a decoration. Like I use that for work. and from a very young age in my 20s, when I was struggling to make rent, I was like, well, what can I do? I could lead music class at a Hebrew school. And, you know, that pays well and good part-time work. And then there were some educators who said, hey, you're good with the kids. Have you considered being a cantor? And I kind of looked at that job again with fresh eyes. I had been told when I was a little boy, you know, Jewish singer likes to go to synagogue. Oh, you should be a cantor someday, right? I never listened to that advice until I chose to follow it at the ripe old age of 25.
Wow.
Went to seminary for 5 years, 1 year in Jerusalem, Israel, where we did intensive language work as well as first year cantorial work, and then 4 years in New York City at a tiny campus just a couple blocks north of where Columbia sits. So essentially Harlem, though they've been calling it Morningside Heights for a few decades. But, you know, 122nd and Broadway, that's where I studied for 4 years.
Okay.
And then, you know, at the time my wife and I were newlyweds, just shortly after graduating, we had our first child, Dahlia. She became our only child. And then eventually we decamped to the suburbs, but I kind of had this funny path where I trained specifically to be a cantor. And then I said, I don't think I want to be a cantor. What do I do next? I'll be a music teacher. So then I was a music teacher for several years in New York City, got some additional training to become certified in music and special education. And then I was like, maybe I want to be a cantor now. So I gave it a try at a synagogue where I was both cantor and head of the religious school.
Right.
Cantor slash educator. Very big job, very heavy lift for a new person in both of those areas.
Okay.
I think I did pretty well, but it was not a synagogue that was very forgiving. And this is actually the main traumatic job loss that we're going to focus on today.
Right.
So that gives you the backstory that I arrived at this synagogue well-trained. On this wall that you can't see on camera, I have the framed diploma.
Okay. And
it's an expensive piece of paper. You can imagine 5 years of graduate school.
Yeah.
All that goes with that. So, I got the work. I got the training. Mm-hmm. And I had this bonus credential, which is I was a, quote, real teacher.
Right.
Certified from New York State, doubly in music and special education.
Okay.
So they were impressed with me, and they hired me with high hopes to take them what I would call like a somewhat ho-hum Hebrew school. That's what they call the a religious school at a synagogue, a sort of ho-hum Hebrew school.
Okay.
And they were pushing out the old ed director. I later learned it was a thing they did every few years because I would become the next person who
would
be pushed out a few years later. But when I got in, you know, there was a vacancy, right? You need a vacancy to get a job. And you don't necessarily interrogate how that vacancy was created. Like, now that I'm in my 40s, I know to ask better questions.
But right.
When you're looking for your first job, sometimes all you want to do is get your first job. You're not going to spend time wondering about the last person who got fired or pushed out or whatever, right? I would later learn that it was rather ugly what they did to her. And sure enough, what they did to me two years later was not good. So to cut to the chase, I should say for 1 minute in my defense, so to speak, because I want to be clear that the job loss was extra traumatic because it became clear that they essentially pushed me out a la firing without a firing.
Oh, wow.
Because they were ready for the
next
person.
That happens a lot.
2 years, right. That was 2 years into a 3-year contract. Mm-hmm. I had a good lawyer who specializes in clergy stuff, so I got a nice severance because I wasn't going to sue them for breaking contract. And they were kind of surprised how fast I lawyered up because it's like, what the F are you doing? I had a tiny toddler at home. It's not like it's a no big deal to tell me the door. Also, I should mention, I kind of jumped over the important part is the in-between.
Uh-huh.
I was a new cantor, but doing rather well. Maybe not awesome, but at least B or B plus. And
Wait.
The first year in the sort of official feedback meeting, they said, we're real happy. You're doing well with the Hebrew school. We like all the music. We like how you're working hard to recruit. And I was bringing music and I was hustling my tail off to bring in new families. Like, it's a whole grind. When you're a small synagogue, you like go to the JCC and you're like, you know, some of it felt a little bit, not like used car salesman exactly, but I'm better one-on-one. I'm not necessarily socially facile in big groups. And sometimes it felt.
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Like, I had to put a little bit of the sales thing on for meeting people.
You have to get them involved. You have to get more people there.
You understand. Right. Recruiting is the same, whatever the organization is.
Yeah, exactly.
some people are better at that than others. I did pretty well given whatever social anxiety I may have. Mm-hmm. And I think in my second year, it felt like things were really popping off. Like some more families had signed up. I brought some new teachers in. We had some nice energy.
Right.
Halfway into that year, an email hit, and I'll remember, I don't remember the date, but I can see the scene. Because this was early in the days of smartphones where like emails were hitting your pocket. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like bad news could happen to you in a parking lot.
Yeah.
See. So I was ready to go home and I get the ding. I'm like, wait, what? So it was like an unexpected review with a bonus like BIP. And you know, when the BIP appears, you know, you're fired or pushed out. And it was some crazy nonsense. Are we a G-rated podcast or do we cuss here, Edna?
Yeah, you can cuss.
Okay, so it's some crazy shit. Because remember, 6 months earlier, they were like, Cantor Kintish, you're the bee's knees. You're
right.
Da, 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 da. And then 6 months later, they're like, oh, on this date, you went this way in the procession and you're supposed to go that way. That was like complaint number two. Like real nitpicky nonsense.
Yeah. Yeah.
When like the high level stuff I was doing was fine, but it became
exactly.
A paper to fire me some months later. And I should also say it's so interesting. I haven't spoken at length about this job loss in some time. So I'm like taking some deep breath. because I'll jump to the end and then you can ask the questions about the job loss, right? Because I don't want to get sucked into the details. But I will say, while acknowledging that I did at least well or medium well at the job of cantor, again, that's music minister in the Jewish synagogue, leading the prayers, doing music and all of its music director and sort of officiant singer of prayers. And principal of the school or director of the school in the role where I supervise teachers. I did some hiring. Yes, I did some firing.
Right.
Shake things up. Brought in some
multitasking together.
Right. Just let's roll up the sleeves. Let's do it. Some people loved what I was doing. Some people did not love what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Some people believed that because they had been there a long time, their opinion superseded all my expertise.
Yeah.
And with respect to the world of religious schools, and I'm going to include Jewish schools, Christian schools, Muslim schools, there's this whole ecosystem of worlds where the governance is entirely lay-led or volunteer-led, and the professional who they hire is beholden to a group of people whose expertise is raising their hands.
Yes.
Or maybe the expertise is, I have a child, and I have a focus group of one, my 11-year-old boy who complains that Hebrew school is boring. And they would come to me like, yeah, I know you're running 8 new activities, but my boy still says it's boring. So what's activity number 9? And then the other person, the vice president, is like, actually, I think you do too many activities. And I'm like, okay, wait, so what
are we doing?
That kind of nonsense happens all the time. And you're laughing, maybe not just because I'm funny, but is there some recognition? And have you ever worked in like church schools?
I have.
Okay.
I have. And I've run them. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, well, my God.
Exactly what you're talking about.
Okay. So I went through that with the complicated feeling of like, y'all people are paying me good money and relying on my expertise. You hired me because I was this guy from New York City who could like settle, you know, a little bit of nonsense. There was a lot of dilly-dallying.
Exactly. I know like exactly what you're talking about. I'm with you.
Period. Right? With you. And I said, how about we get the snacks in 5 minutes or less, and then we have fun social time with a little touch of Jewish something back in the room instead of like 25 minutes of just hanging out in the lobby.
Okay.
And some people were like, great. And some people were like, why are you messing with snack time? I mean, like the kind of things that are sacred cows are unreal. Looking back at it, I can joke about it now because it's 10 years later. I swear later tonight, I'm going to have an adult beverage because, like, there is, let's return to the end of all of this. I did good work. And for whatever reason, the people who are in the business of, I'm doing this gesture, shuffling through the clergy in that community, they were ready to have me see the door. Maybe they already knew I wasn't going to be given a renewal.
Right.
As in an additional contract for whatever reason that was never totally clear to me. I believe it might have been because I had the presence of mind to occasionally say, like, respectfully disagree with you.
Right.
You know.
You got it.
There's some lay people who got really, really mad with me having an opinion and having the nerve to stick to my guns on some things. Let's not use that guns metaphor. Just stick to to my sense of purpose on that, right?
Absolutely.
So, and looking back on it, like, it's nice to talk about it with a sense of distance and relative dispassionate language. I'll tell you, there's still a lot of hurt there. And here's why.
Of course.
Because the moment that email hit the pocket and I opened it up, I was just like, what? Like, my head was spinning because it was so clear it was the kind of thing you get on the way to being fired. And I contacted my lawyer and she's like, oh my God, yeah. And it was so confusing because the timeline where 1 year in doing good
everything.
Work and then another 6 months of essentially doing similar good work leading to thing two, which is basically, here's the documents which are going to be on the way out the door when we fire you or ask you to resign.
Right.
And sure enough, that was where the conversation landed a few months later when I lawyered up and I got... You know, not a year's worth, but they essentially unilaterally cut my 3-year contract at year two.
Yeah.
And my lawyer said, we're going straight to arbitration and we think we have a strong case to get full year's compensation without the work and we're ready for it.
Right.
And they were shocked how fast I lawyered up and how good my attorney was. But like, and they also, I want to tell one last detail because I think for people with love to all of our hourly workers, there's a certain segment of the workforce where you essentially have no rights from the moment you step in the building to the moment you leave. So if you get fired for no reason, it sucks, but you have no recourse.
Nope.
And that's terrible. And that's a whole different conversation for another day.
A whole different conversation.
My particular thing is like, the white collar world with multiple degrees and teacher certifications and blah, blah, blah. And they could still say, go from you're contractual, but today you're at will. That was essentially what they did.
Mm-hmm.
And because let's acknowledge privilege here, because I'm affluent and affluent adjacent, let's call it middle plus, upper middle class, whatever. Yeah. I mean, my wife and I are both.
Yes.
Teachers, you know, so. Combined, we're well over 100 grand together with nice benefits. So like we had nice compensation, but I was working my tail off, like literally 60 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
I only had one real day off. And I guarded that with an electric fence. Don't mess with me on Monday. Monday is my Sabbath.
Yeah.
But Tuesday to Sunday, I was working long days, 6 days. It was brutal. And so to have the end be abrupt and so unceremonious and so ungrateful just felt disgusting. It was it was hurtful.
Yeah.
It felt spiteful.
Yeah.
I couldn't help but personalize it. And at the next therapist, when we moved for the next job, by the way, when that job ended the following year, I was the job of a thousand, the year of 1,000 jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I believe I had 7 W-2s in 1 year, maybe 8. So like 2 hours at this school, 4 hours at this school. My biggest job was 15 hours co-teaching a 2-year-old's class.
Wow.
So that was great for my early childhood chops. So I use it as a year of regrowth and rejuvenation. And I said, I will take jobs where I will enjoy doing the work.
Yeah.
And guess what? I love being a workaday Jewish educator. It doesn't pay a lot, but like send me into a classroom, say make Hebrew fun. I can do it. Yeah. Give me 40 kids, tell me to get them singing. I can do it.
I can do it. Yeah.
Right. So I took all those jobs. And I think this is, if there's like a tiny piece of advice here, if you listener are resonating because you've recently lost a job or you know someone who has, my best piece of advice, one, get a therapist if you don't have one already, or don't quit your therapist, right? And make sure you like access your support network because you're going through a trauma, right? Yeah. It's a loss and you're grieving. And we can talk about the grief. And then thing two is get some small jobs while you're working for the serious next job.
Yeah.
Like seriously get a 5-hour a week job at Target. Like if you've always wondered, would it be fun to be a waitress or waiter? Try it.
Yeah. Okay.
If you're like into being outside, get a job as a landscaper. Guarantee you get hired tomorrow. And then you can't get stuck in like being depressed about what they did in the last job.
Yeah.
And you'll probably get buff and get a tan, right? Like I'm not young enough to do landscaping anymore, but I recently had a job scare at my current job. Mm-hmm. Thank God it worked out fine. But there was a moment that felt a little hairy. And so I went through like the list. Right. A buddy of mine is in corporate at a big tree service. And he's like, you know, I'd hire you if you needed to.
Yeah.
You know? So like sometimes if you're afraid you're at the precipice, check in with your network, your support people, who could hire you for a little bit for an in-between job if you need it. Mm-hmm. That's good to like write down to calm your anxiety. If you've recently suffered a job loss, though, getting a lot of those little jobs, the easy to get jobs, get them. And until like too busy.
Yeah.
Because I think it's healthy to move.
Yeah.
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Physically and kind of metaphorically, professionally.
Yeah.
I do want to say one last thing about the job loss, because I said it in passing. For me, it was a trauma.
Yeah.
I was so proud of the work I was doing until the moment that hit. And then I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And it kind of shattered me.
Yeah.
It shattered my confidence, which was rather precarious because I was new in this career of cantor and religious school principal. Both jobs are new to me, right?
Right.
So no matter how good you are, no one is authentically confident until like year 3, 4, or 5
right,
in any chosen career. Forget about job. Career, at least 5 years. Right. So like in year 2, I wasn't all the way there.
Right.
When I got like this thing that felt like, not a reprimand, but like a rejection of the work that I'd done, kind of a dismissal of all my efforts.
Mm-hmm.
It was so confusing. It made me so mad. It made me so hurt. And when I, after the year of 1,000 jobs, I did get a new cantor job, which brought me to the present location where I worked for a few years. They were ready to give me a contract renewal. I chose to pivot once again to education. Mm-hmm. And here I am. I'm also not talking at all about my play, so I'll mention that before we go.
Yeah. But
along the way with all these zigzags, actually one of the only things that was a true through line was the play that you see under my last name, Life Review, the Hospice Musical, which I began when I was a chaplain, learning to be a chaplain that first year at the synagogue. Actually, the second year at the synagogue. So this is actually an important detail. This came up in another interview because I'd forgotten about this. The same year that the project was birthed. Mm-hmm. It was the same year that I suffered this job trauma.
Oh, wow.
I want to repeat that.
Wow.
The project, I'm pointing wrong. There it is. The project that brings me here, the reason why I do all these media appearances is because I've created a play called Life Review, the Hospice Musical. It was birthed during a year of intense job trauma.
Wow.
And it was like one of the things I could do when this crazy shit was happening was I could write my songs.
Right.
And I think that's like, shout out to all my creative people. Maybe this is tip for job loss number three, is
be creative.
Your creative self, right? Mm-hmm. Here, I'm having trouble pointing. There we go. See that art there?
Uh-huh.
That is art that I created at some, you know, workshop. I am not a fine artist, but it kind of fits into a wall with two professional art things.
Yeah.
I'm no professional, but it's lovely. And it's something I do sometimes as a way to like kind of get my creative juices going. It's wonderful.
Right.
It's nice for us to play in new sandboxes, especially the creative ones, not to become art makers or go to the fair to sell your stuff. That's not the idea. It's mm-hmm. to just play in new ways to create
yeah.
new things, to give yourself joy and pleasure. And then mm-hmm. maybe you like do a thing. Maybe yeah. you won't. It doesn't matter. But I advocate even just something as easy as like adult coloring books. It's lovely. So pick up your colored pencils, folks. If you're crazy, pick up some watercolors. It's good for you. And it was very helpful for my creative process. I did a lot of painting and drawing while thinking about mm-hmm. the songs. The other thing where it happened was swimming. So maybe tip number four is go for a walk, go for a swim, get moving. Because the stuckedness is
yes.
real. I think... I know our topic is about job loss, so I've named it as a potential source of trauma or grief. Now think about the way we all talk about trauma or grief for everything other than job loss. When someone has let's say their mother dies,
mm-hmm.
we are not surprised when they get depressed. We are not surprised when their work performance suffers. Some companies are more gracious about it than mm-hmm. others, right? Mm-hmm. But we know that when someone dies, it has effects on the people, right?
Right.
That may be a very surface level understanding of grief. We'll go deeper on grief in a longer show or another day. But I think there's an understanding about that. However, I don't think there's much of an understanding about how much job loss can hurt.
Yeah.
And so I invite all of your viewers and listeners to think about the job that you most loved when you lost it. If there was a job loss story that hurt, whether it was a firing or being in a situation such that you needed to resign or move on,
mm-hmm.
you know, when things are good and then they go bad, it can just like wreck our sense of self, right?
Sure.
Because we spend so much time at work. In many parts of the country, when people meet you, they say, "Hey, what's your name? What do you do?" The joke is in New York City, they say, "Where do you live?" And in Washington, D.C., they say, "Who do you know?" But in the rest of the world, they say, "What do you do?"
Right.
And it's like, it's such a signifier. What's your job? So when you lose that, you're like, wait, who am I? Now, the funny thing about writing this musical is I've had this zigzag path where I'm like, cantor, chaplain, music teacher, cantor, music teacher. Where am I? The through line is I was like a playwright, the little play that could. Where I went from being a beginner chaplain, writing some songs, partnering with some composers, creating this thing, eventually making some small performances, some workshops, COVID pivot, oy vey, that was another set of work traumas. If you consider creating a play, a job, the dream was taking off and then boom. And all of a sudden, again, I was like, wait, who am I if this thing isn't taking off? Happily, we're back to business. Check out the website. Check me out on Instagram. Look me up and you can learn more. But we're trying. And, you know, one of the silver linings to the cloud of that job loss was discovering how resilient I am. And also discovering that it wasn't a just thing for me as a creator. Not everyone discovers this, but when I started leaning into my creativity, Edna, I discovered I was really good at it.
Right.
I had to own it. I had to be bold enough to share it, to be validated by professional songwriters, basically. And then be nervy enough to ask myself into a partnership with some very good musicians. And they liked my stuff and they said yes. And that was Jason Spiewak, Michael Miller, two wonderful composers who are the heart of our music team. So I, as many times as I'd gotten credentialed, again, I'm credentialed as a cantor, I'm credentialed as a chaplain, and I'm credentialed as an educator twice over, special ed in music. It's ridiculous. I just keep going to school. And then I was a beginner again as a playwright. So
wow.
I pivot and kept going ahead. That was an exciting thing that happened despite the awfulness of the job loss. So there you go.
Awesome. Wow. I think you've answered every question. And the only question I really have for you, did you ever go back and to start to think about why they fired you, or you just kept pressing ahead?
Oh, 100%. And, you know, I mentioned in passing the therapist. I was being very literal about that. I worked with a guy who was former Army, and he told me, like, I exhibited symptoms of PTSD.
Yeah.
He's like, I've worked with a lot of soldiers. And he's like, it's not to say that you literally went through war, but you were in an environment where it felt like there were metaphorical landmines.
Yeah.
And you never even knew if you were stepping in something.
Right.
And at the time, it just felt regular until you realized it was all insanity once you were out of there.
Right.
Again, it's amazing. As I retell this story, I can feel the adrenaline coming up. And it's not to say it's bad. Like, I'm glad
I know what you mean.
Conversation with you, but anyone who's had conversations with a good interviewer like yourself or even a therapist about painful experiences, you know, it can bring up some stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And that might mean the old feelings, the old thoughts. And the so I want to try to answer your question directly. Okay. Why did they fire me? I think they didn't like that I wasn't as pliable as they wanted their clergy to be.
Okay.
And that there were some things where I was like, yeah, absolutely. And some things I was like, absolutely not. And the other thing is, I believe there is also a culture of an unhealthy culture of churning through their clergy team. Like, if you look on this unnamed synagogue's website, or however you might do some searching, you would discover they have literally had a rabbi or a cantor or ed director who comes and goes.
Right.
On average, every 3 to 5 years for decades. And that's not healthy.
Right.
You don't want your clergy to just keep coming and going.
Right.
And the reason is they had a culture where they really wanted the lay people to run the show.
Right.
And I also think they didn't know what they wanted. So they kept having proxy wars where they would hire the next person who would solve their problem.
Mm-hmm.
But of course the problem was not the next clergy person. Like, if the community keeps fighting with each other about A, B, C, and also X, Y, Z and everything in between, that was kind of the thing that was happening. A lot of almost fights and yelling at board meetings, really unhealthy. Like, I remember feeling in like a few times a week where I was like, whoa, that meeting was uncomfortable. Like, that was a feeling I had on the regular in a job. And it wasn't like sexually uncomfortable. It was just like strange power dynamics. People said stuff, people getting angry in unexpected ways. Like, my childhood trauma had to do with like some emotional abuse from my father. And some scary yelling stuff, nothing physical. Right. But it means that as an adult, I tend to have, let's say, heightened fear response or anxiety response to difficult supervisors. And this stuff about, like, why are they fighting at the board meeting, it kind of made my skin crawl. I don't know if you can relate. I mean, just a lot of healthy, well-adjusted people get upset when people.
Oh yeah, I can relate. Totally.
But like, for me, I'm like, why is yeah. everyone angry right now?
Yeah, totally.
When it was finally directed at me, I was like, what did I do? Which is, of course. Yeah.
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Abuse survivor always yeah. says for the rest of their life. The subtext is, what did I do? What did I do?
Right.
So like what I would call a typically developing person or a non-abuse survivor person who gets fired or pushed out is always going to say, what did I do? Right.
Right.
And then the person who arrives to the job on day one, wondering, what did I do? Add that to a work yeah. trauma. It's like next level. So when I was yeah. in therapy yeah. for the following year and change, Edna, it was intense because the first year
I know.
Just bringing it down. And then the second year was with the guy who was naming it as a PTSD. And he used that word trauma for the first time.
Yeah.
So
I get it. I get yeah. everything that you kind of like laid out happened with me on the last job I was on. I do these interviews a lot.
Sending you a heart. I'm sorry that,
you know, but they really are. Everyone has the same solution: go to therapy. And I love, you know, hearing about this from a male perspective, because a lot of women, I've interviewed women talking right. about this, but I'm so glad that the male perspective is here, and you covered every point of it, which is awesome.
Glad really to awesome. Do it.
So audience, now that you have the story straight from the horse's mouth, as it were, straight from Benjamin, I want you all to, if you have questions, I want you to send them to us. Ask the questions, because I really want this segment to be really filtered and directed to our guests, because they are
yeah,
sharing this story.
I love it.
And I want you to share your questions with him, and then let him answer them. You know, put them out there. Comment below the video. You know, make sure that you're leaving the questions for him. We'll tag him in so that this can be talked about, because he has the experience, and I think that he would be able to support you and navigate you, help you navigate this process. Because it is a process. It is a process. Now, before we leave the show, I would love to hear about your play. And tell us about that so we can look forward to that.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. Is the mic still good? I moved it off camera.
No, that's fine. It's good. You're good.
You can absolutely. Still hear me?
It's off. Yes, yeah, it's off.
Chef's kiss. Love it. All right. So the play again is called Life Review, the hospice musical.
Okay.
It is a musical comedy, a new work inspired by my real life experiences as a hospice chaplain. I was visiting the patients, having these great conversations, mm-hmm. doing an interview style dialogue called Life Review. So okay. I didn't invent that phrase, but I always found it poetic. And I wrote a song about it eventually. Structured around that question and answer back and forth. Later on, if you want to hear me sing, I'll throw it at you. but the big idea here is I was meeting all of these people, hearing amazing stories. And one night I called my wife. I said, honey, these stories I'm hearing bedside, I think they want to be songs. And without skipping a beat, she goes, Ben, get writing. So that night, you know, I opened up one of those black and white composition books, started yes. scribbling some ideas, and those notes became the rough draft, which would become one of the songs that are still in the musical today. Okay. It's called Will It Still Snow? It's a ballad about a woman imagining the world after her death. Will it still snow when I'm gone? How do I know they go on and so forth? Beautiful song. It always gets the people crying. But that was the first one that poured out of me. And it wasn't specifically biographical, but it reflected the feelings of many women who I met, where their end of life concern as expressed had to do with the next of kin, the next generation. Were they going to be okay? Right. Other stories had to do with pride for work or adventures that they wanted to talk about. A lot of people love their 20 and 30 year old self, the height of potency or the height of power. But others love to talk about the whole arc, the whole adventure. Some people can't talk. And then you get the story secondhand from the plus one, the spouse, the child.
Yeah.
God forbid, the parent. So I had all of these stories coming at me and I began to kind of bubble up with creativity. I began writing the songs. I partnered with a couple of composers, shout out to Jason Spiewak and Michael Miller, who liked the idea and worked with me. Also want to acknowledge Sue Horowitz, wonderful singer-songwriter. All three of these people you can find on the internet. Their music is wonderful. Sue Horowitz in particular heard my music early on. When I shared my song in public for the first time, it was a session where she hosted at a conference that wasn't otherwise music related. But the room was full of people crying at the end of my song. And afterwards she came up to me and she said, "Ben, you've created something of great power. Is there more here?" And I said, "There is." She said, "Please keep working on it." So that was a huge boost because she's like a real recording artist. She tours, she's moderately famous in the Jewish world, right? A real songwriter. So that validation was important early on because this is my first musical. And of course the partnerships I mentioned, you know, the fact that good musicians thought my words were good enough that they wanted to work with me was huge. And then I guess I had this sort of stubborn tenacity to keep going. The story is long and winding, like my job story was. Read about it on the website, liferevmusical.com.
Okay.
But suffice to say, a big part of it was building the creative team and making performances ever bigger. So a tiny conference, and then a late night at the conference, and then a main stage at the conference, and then a community workshop, then COVID. Scale it back, one man show, a dozen virtual shows from this very space, ta-da! And then once COVID ended, we were back in business. I did my first Fringe Festival at Asheville Fringe. I'm looking forward to Charm City Fringe in Baltimore City in the fall, in a month. I've done some house shows, I've done some synagogue shows, I've done professional trainings. I'm booked for a hospice conference next spring. So like the big dream is to take the full length show and stand it up, as theater people say, on a stage with a cast, with props, costumes, the whole nine. Mm. In the meantime, though, I have this one man show, which is very nimble because it's just this guy. And I can travel to you, dear listener. If you like me and you like the idea of my show, I have a guitar with a hard case. I come to you. I have a band in a box performance, and I can do an engaging Q&A to follow. I can also expand the educational component that follows for synagogue, church, mosque, community appearances. So we have discussion modules with small groups to reflect on songs from the play. It's super engaging. Again, if any of this sounds interesting, you can hit me up via the website, LifeReviewMusical.com, or at LifeReviewMusical on Instagram, and I'll respond to all the DMs.
Awesome.
That's where we're at, and I'm trying to. The last thing I want to mention is, I have this big dream, and I wish it would come true yesterday. And if not yesterday, today. And if not today, then tomorrow. Right.
Right.
However, unfortunately, that's not how the theater business works. So kudos to me for sticking with it for literally a decade and we're still not done. I mean, the play is basically done, but I'm still bringing productions to the world.
Okay.
And they might be small house shows. They might be medium-sized community shows. They might be big shows at a state hospice thing.
Okay.
And I'm still also mentioning to people, if you know theater, if you know theater people, if this project feels compelling to you, help me connect with theater people so that we can stand it up on stage. Okay. That's the real dream, right? I'm happy to be one-man show and do the show wherever, whenever, streaming or in person. Right. But the real dream I'm chasing is a partnership on stage. So if you're listening and you're involved with the theater and you like what you're hearing, please be in touch. That's my dream.
Awesome. That is terrific. We thank you for all the information you gave us. We thank you for sharing your story. At this part of it, we're going to end it and we're going to say goodbye for now. This is your host, Edna White, on Keeping It Real, and my esteemed guest, Benjamin Kentish, saying goodbye for now.
Thanks, guys.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Eden Cher.
And I'm Brock Ciarlelli.
We played best friends on The Middle.
And became best friends in real life.
We're here to rewatch The Middle with all of you.
Each week, we'll recap an episode with behind-the-scenes stories, guest interviews, and what we think now, many years later.
There's a lot to dive into, so let's get to middling.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.